Hello, everybody. Welcome back. So today we are on part three of my interview with John Dennis, who is talking to us about Republican politics in the state of California. We all know that California is very blue. We've been talking about that, but we've been talking more about how California is slowly but surely turning more red. And that is what we want to see in every blue state. You guys, we really have to turn this country around really, really fast because we are going so quickly into a communist direction. And we know that the Democrats love communism. They love socialism. They love pretending like democracy and communism and socialism are all kind of synonymous when they're totally not. Socialism and communism are they're tyrannical. They're authoritarianism. You do not get a say in a socialist or communist nation. So you don't have a vote. Okay. And we're really seeing that right now with ever since the 2020 presidential election, where it just really seems like we're going and we're putting on this little show, we're going and we're voting and look at us, here's our vote. But is it getting counted? And why are there so many votes going to candidates that you really wouldn't assume should be getting that many votes? I think Joe Biden is the prime candidate for that. We just all know that he didn't get 81 million votes. We all know that Joe Biden did not get 81 million votes in the 2020 presidential election. We all know it was stolen. If you haven't watched 2000 Mules, then you should definitely go watch that. But the only way to beat them is to beat them. It's not really anything else. And if we have to join them in their ballot chasing and ballot harvesting, then honestly, at this point, you guys, I'm just like, so be it. And I'm really glad that we have a lot of people who are into the ballot chasing endeavors. Charlie Kirk gave, I think it was $5 million to Scott Pressler. Scott Pressler is awesome, and he's been working on ballot chasing. And now, of course, you guys know that he is working with Blair Trump at the RNC, which should have happened a long time ago. We should have had Ronna McDaniel should have just gotten ousted a long, long time ago from the RNC. I don't know how John feels about that, but that's how I feel about that. And I just think she has been a disaster. We have been losing with Ronna in charge. And we all know that. She spent so much money. If you look at the actual receipts of how she's been spending the RNC's donation money, I mean, you guys know she sends those emails. She's always been sending those emails like, send us more money. We need more money. Country's going to die if you don't send us money. But then she spent all of the money on like flower arrangements and limousines. And this is just how DC operates. I mean, these people do not care about the country. They do not care about preserving freedom. They do not care about you and me. They just don't care. And so I'm really glad that we're starting to see this new shift in the RNC, where we have this new leadership coming in. It really does need to be, because this is what the party now is a pro-Trump front to combat this communism, socialism, quote-unquote democracy. Because again, we're not a democracy. I think it's an important point to make, and I've been seeing some people talk about this on Twitter recently, but a democracy is like Sharia law, okay? Sharia law is horrible, and you need to look into that if you haven't, but that's a democracy. You have most of the people wanting the wrong thing. That is a democracy. We don't have a democracy. America, and don't let them gaslight you into ever believing otherwise, but America is a constitutional republic. That is what we are. We are not a democracy. If we were a democracy, we could turn into a Middle Eastern country like that. And you don't want that. I mean, you guys see what's going on in the Middle East. We do not want America to be a democracy, but it is interesting to me to see how the Democrats will try to say, well, we are for democracy, but also socialism and communism, and also removing all of your rights, and also making sure that you never have a say in an election again. You'll also need to look up HR 1 if you haven't, House Resolution 1. They're really trying to federalize elections now, and that means that all leaders would be installed like Joe Biden, cough, cough, Barack Obama 2.0. 3.0. And literally you just wouldn't have a say. You just wouldn't have a say anymore. Not that you do right now. But we are seeing the RNC take this new direction that we've really just been needing to take for the past 4 years. Like, we should have been doing this for a really long time. Getting new leadership, having this ballot chasing stuff going on, and then also just really having this in the back of our head and in the front of our head and in the side and on the left and on the right and everywhere in our mind, this notion that we have got to separate business and state. I have been talking about it for a really long time, but we do need to separate. There needs to be a separation of business and state. Everybody says separation of church and state, separation of church. Your faith is going to follow you everywhere, like it or not. Obviously, you know, I think that if you're in the government, like, you need to take into account everybody, but your faith's going to follow you anywhere you go. If you have like a faith that you take seriously, that's just the way that it is. You're going to leave it at the door when you're, you know, a politician in government. I mean, a lot of them have fake faith, so they do. But if you have like a real faith, then it's going to follow you everywhere. And everybody should have real faith in Jesus Christ, is my opinion. I think that a lot of things would be fixed if people just read their Bible, understood their Bible, really starting in the homes with the men leading their wives and children spiritually. I just think that that would have a ripple effect into every other area of our lives. And then society would drastically improve pretty instantaneously, actually. But my point in bringing that up is that it's not the same thing, but it's the same kind of idea. We need to have a separation of business and state, where really, and it's not you leave it at the door, you literally leave it nowhere because it's not following you. It's nowhere a part of you because you don't have all of these business strings attached to you as a politician. We have to have a separation of business and state. We have all of these big corporations, big pharma, all of these things sneakily and slimily just gripping our government and strangling the people with all of the things that they're having the government do for them. I mean, lobbyists are disgusting, and we have so many problems when it comes to businesses working with the government, the synergetic relationship that they have, where they are helping each other to really the detriment of all of the people. So they get rich, the people get poor, and they come up with a bunch of cool rules where the companies get tax exemptions and then the government gets, you know, money and favors. And that's why they sell, by the way, all of Hunter Biden's paintings were selling for like $1 million, like his little finger paintings. There's so much corruption in the government. And a big part of that is this non-separation of business and state. And it really does have to become a thing or we're screwed. So on this episode, we're going to be talking more about that and some other things that John Dennis has run into as he has run against Nancy Pelosi numerous times. He is working with all of these Republican organizations in California. And he's really, a big part of what we're talking about is how can you talk to people about what you're running into in these blue cities and states, how to change their minds about things. Because you have to remember that these people are very brainwashed. They have grown up a certain way for a very long time. They are almost immune to facts. And it's our job to figure out how to reach through and get through to them, because they really, you know, I think a lot of people want to know truth. I think that people, just as people that are made, you know, in God's image, and we care about justice, we care about truth. I think people want justice. I think they like truth. I think that sometimes if it's personally inconvenient, it becomes problematic to see it. But that's our job in these blue states and cities, to try to talk to people, because there's just not going to be, there's not another option for them to really see the truth. So that is what we were talking about on this episode, and let's get into it. Oh my gosh, literally, like, that is what happens when you defund the police. Criminals become emboldened, and they know that. I think a lot of people are like, oh, criminals don't know. Well, yeah, they do, because that's why they're emboldened, and that is why they are committing so many more crimes. Like, they know. That's so scary.
You know, the cops here are a rough, I mean, you know, they're so overextended. We have we're down about a third of our charter requirement for police in San Francisco. Even if we were at our chartered amount, you know, crime is so high that these guys would be, you know, behind the eight ball. But So, I mean, I kind of get it. I mean, what would have been nice was if they had reached out to this guy and say, you know, this is not acceptable.
Yeah.
Give him the message that they were investigating it. So that people like him don't think it's, you know, that it's appropriate to threaten shoot people in the face because you disagree with the Republican Party's position on the Second Amendment.
Yeah. I mean, that's wild.
Yeah. Yeah. So this stuff like that happens all the time. But, you know, look, I grew up in a public housing project in Jersey City. I got a long way to go before I get scared.
Yeah. Well, good luck to them. I mean, I think it's awesome. I mean, yeah, we have to stand up to these people sometimes and just say, hey, we're not afraid of you. Like, they want us to be afraid of them is the thing. And I think that it's just so powerful when we refuse to be. And it's just like, no, we're actually going to stand up for these rights. We're actually going to tell you the facts. We're actually going to have to express the truth to you. Not your truth, not my truth, just the plain old, good old truth. And just y'all are going to have to listen to it. Y'all are going to have to listen to it. I mean, that's why they're trying to shut us up so much, too. They just really can't process the fact that, you know, that they're wrong. They can't listen to other ideas and think, oh, wow. If you can't be exposed to other ideas, then your ideas are just really flimsy. And they know that. But yeah, the crime is definitely growing up everywhere. It's going up everywhere. It's really sad. I mean, because the DC crime is going up. I know it's going up there. It's going up in all of the blue cities, obviously. But even in the South, where my family is from, it's going up a lot. Like, just randomly sirens everywhere, way more than, you know, normal. And like, there's like all of these illegal immigrant men fighting age men again, not their families, just fighting age men, like meeting in these coffee shops and bookstores and like having chit chats and languages that people don't understand. What are they talking about? Like, what are y'all talking about? All of you fighting age men, like at the bookstores and at the coffee shops, they're very loud and rowdy, but of course, you know, you can't understand them. You know, there's a lot of crime. I mean, my point is that the crime's going up everywhere, and like the police are going to be overextended everywhere, not just in the blue cities and states, but everywhere. And we already see that happening.
When you have a regime that wants people on edge, they're going to encourage, a lack of law and order. This is a different country, though. I feel like we're starting to make some progress on this issue. I think a lot of people are up in arms. People you wouldn't expect to be up in arms over this border business, which is sort of an extension of law and order thing. There's a guy I know, good friend known from many decades. We were just together this last weekend. And who's always been sort of like lax about the border. You know, he owns a business, employs a lot of people. So he, you know, probably benefits a little bit from, there not being, cheap labor, you know, crossing the border on the one hand. On the other hand, he was completely freaked out about it.
Yeah.
And people are starting to see that, you know, these folks are coming across the border unvetted. Military age men, mostly, who have not been vetted, you know, and don't understand the link between Edmund Burke, you know,
yeah,
American politics, right? No, the ideas of the Enlightenment that founded, that the founders used to base a country on individual liberty and sovereignty of the individual. They don't get that, you know?
Yeah, they really don't.
And so this has a huge, you know, impact on us, and he's like freaking out. He's got kids, and he doesn't want to see them, you know, and their kids, you know, grow up in a country that's not, you know, what it should be. So, in any event, I think you're going to see a bit of an awakening. That's a bit encouraging right now. I see that happening, and I feel good about that.
Yeah, well, people are going to have to, because we're in like a whole lot of trouble. Like, we're in a whole world of trouble, actually. I'm glad you bring up the point, you know, about unvetted. I mean, they are unvetted. We're totally, and the numbers are wonky, I think, because we think that, you know, it's a certain number. It's going to be much, much higher than that, because that's just the number we know about. We have no idea how many illegal illegal immigrants are in our country right now. We have no idea, but it's not just me that has seen, you know, these fighting age men meeting at local coffee shops and bookstores. I'm hearing, you know, on Twitter spaces from all kinds of people from all over the country that are running into that, primarily in Texas. But people are seeing that, you know, in a lot of places, and that's concerning. There was also a video of like a Muslim terrorist guy who was upset that the Border Patrol people didn't know who he was because he thought he was like super cool and famous for being a terrorist. And they were like, we don't know who you are. And he was like, well, you will. We don't know who these people are. And apparently some of them think that we should because they're so famous for being evil. But we really don't know who, you know, is in our country. We have to know who's in our country. This is such basic shizness. I'm not going to curse, but it is very basic shizness. I will say that. And we need to know who's coming into our country because we just don't know. And, you know, I'm glad that people are waking up, you know, but why did it have to come to this point for people to see? Why did it have to get to a crisis point for people to understand, oh yeah, maybe we do want to know who's coming into our country? That's crazy. What a crazy idea that we didn't want to do that before. Like, okay. But I am glad that people are starting to wake up. They're going to have to. We really are in a whole world of danger if people don't. I mean, I don't know about people in big cities, other places, but like going out at night in DC, not really an option anymore. You know, you're probably going to, I don't know if you're going to come back. And it bothers me because there's so many homeless veterans in DC and they're just, you know, strewn around the city. And then we have the government kicking the veterans out of places so that they can welcome in the illegal immigrants, giving all of the illegal immigrants, like, you know, these whatever $10,000 gift cards and debit cards in like New York or somewhere. Why aren't we putting our own people first? Why aren't we putting our veterans, especially, before these illegal immigrants? I have questions. I would say, yes, I do. I do. I have questions about that because we should be putting our own people first. Okay. And that shouldn't sound selfish to people. If you guys saw all of the veterans, the homeless veterans that need medical help, they need a home, they just need assistance, and they literally risk their lives for us and our freedom that everybody's just throwing into the trash can because, oh, communism is so cool. It's never worked before, but wow, I'd really like to not work and have money and make finger paintings like Hunter. Like, if you guys have got to just wake up. I'm sorry. Like, my generation irritates me endlessly because they're just so illogical and stupid. And if you guys don't wake up soon, we're not going to have a free country in the world, because if we lose America, we've lost all freedom. We've lost all chance of combating globalism at all. And globalism is global communism. Just, it's never worked. It's never, ever worked. I don't want to go on a whole communism rant, but it does really deeply bother me that we have these homeless veterans that fought for our freedom that we're throwing away into the trash can right now for an idea that has never worked, communism. And that we're letting in these intruders, these invaders, come into our country and handing them all of our tax dollars that we could be using to help our own people. It bothers me, okay? It actually really disturbs me. And if it doesn't disturb you, I don't know. I would say you're a sociopath. That doesn't make sense. It should be a given. It should just be a known fact that we put our own veterans, our own homeless, hurt veterans ahead of illegal immigrants. Like, shouldn't that be common? Common sense? Does that exist anymore? I guess not, because that's why we do this podcast on common sense, but, you know.
Yeah, it's so tragic. And I think it's so funny because when Scott Pressler was doing a rant about that, an effective one to some woman who's questioning him, right when I got that text a few years back saying we're under attack from Antifa, he was making that same point. Look, we have homeless veterans and we're, you know, clearing out hotels, making hotel rooms available for illegal immigrants.
Schools now too. They're kicking kids out of their schools to make room for these people
and offering them health care. And it's, you know, what's happening? What's happening?
We should 100% be putting our own people first. It's insanity to suggest, you know, otherwise. And I'm a Christian. So like, I understand, you know, wanting to help people or, you know, take people in that are going through a hard time, you know, families, needy babies or something like that. But this is not what this is. If you look at the actual footage, the video footage coming out from the border, it's all of these men, these fighting age men that again are meeting and planning and plotting. What exactly? I don't know. Probably not great. Probably not good. Probably not something that is going to be safe. But if you look at the footage, it's not all these families. It's all of these men that are doing something. And so it's just not the same thing. And by the way, this is something that I also like to say to leftists who are like, well, Jesus would let them in. Jesus would let them in. Like, as if these leftists have ever read the Bible or care about Jesus's takes on anything. Democrats in general, I am finding, don't know much about the Bible or God or his will or morality or his objective, God's honest truth. Like, you know, the my truth people aren't going to be the God's honest truth people, if you know what I mean. But I will usually say to them, like, no, Jesus would not want people to come this dangerous way into our country. And he wouldn't want us to put ourselves in harm's way. Just, you know, to let in these fighting age men. No, there needs to be a better process. Jesus would have a better process if we were to take people in. I'm not against taking people in who need help, but that's just not what's happening here. And so I don't appreciate being manipulated and gaslit into thinking that it is, or listening to people try to do that to other people and then try to act like, oh, well, this Jesus would let the Jesus would figure out a way that kids were not being sex trafficked, raped, tortured, where drug cartel people were not pulling all these drugs into our country to kill our people, and having all of these criminals come in that are raping and murdering our own people now too. So Jesus would find a different way. It's not just unsafe for us the way that we're doing it. It's unsafe for them. And that's the point that I try to make to leftists, because, you know, they don't really care about Americans anymore. So you got to say, well, it's actually more unsafe for them too. Maybe you care about the illegal immigrants, but even if you bring that up, they're still like, no, they need to come this way. So they don't even care about the illegal immigrant. I don't know what they care about.
Yeah, that's really, you know, kind of a cheap thing to do, I think. And, you know, make that kind of a comment. But I mean, it's, you know, to say that, I mean, everybody can use their, you know, their religious points of view to say, oh, this person would do that. It's so easy.
You know. Yeah, I just think, you know, it's wrong. It's wrong no matter how you want to look at it. But a lot of people, because, you know, I'm always like talking about Christianity on this podcast and in my life, like people are just like, well, Jesus wouldn't do that. And so it's just interesting that people that don't know Jesus, you know, act like they know what he would do. But yeah, I mean, we just can't be opening up our places for illegal immigrants at the expense of our veterans. Not okay.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I don't know, I mean, I don't want to get into a whole theological thing but on this, but I mean, really what we're talking about is, sure, charity is wonderful, but is charity terribly effective when it comes from the government?
Yes.
I mean, here in San Francisco, we have a budget of city budget, city and the county, one and the same, but $14 billion, which is bigger than 13 U.S. states.
Wow.
It's, you know, the city alone you know, spends $1 billion on homeless, street drug addicts. But that doesn't include the charity. So this, you know, there's maybe $2.5 billion spent on, you know, 8,000 people. I mean, you know, honestly, is this effective charity?
Yeah.
A better way to do it?
Yeah. And they never, you know, regroup, rethink, they don't readjust, they don't try to fix the problem.
Well, they don't solve the problem, because if they solve the problem, it puts them out of jobs.
Yeah. No, I mean, exactly.
So, you know, it's funny. I don't know if I can take, I think it may have been used before me, but I know I use the term homeless industrial complex a lot in 2018 where when I ran for supervisor. Now I see it all over Twitter. Yeah, there's a whole vested group that, you know, that wants to, you know, wants to keep this racket going, frankly, based on human misery. It's shameful.
Yes, it is. But that's the Democrat way, is to, you know, get in power, stay in power by pretending you're going to solve these people's problems, but then you never do. And they actually end up getting a lot worse. I mean, we're just seeing that happen in a lot of these blue cities and states. I mean, it just always gets worse. And you'd think that people would kind of be like, why? They say they're going to fix things and then they get worse. But of course, Democrats don't really look at data or statistics or charts or look at anything that, you know, is data driven. And so they don't really care. I mean, if you're not looking at that stuff, then to me, it says that you don't really care. If the people that are telling you so compassionately that they're going to help you and do all of these things, some wonderful things to help you, if you're not checking back with stats to see if they're actually doing that, then you don't really care about fixing the problem. You care about lip service. You care about listening to people pretend to care, but then they're not doing anything to suggest that they actually care. And so they don't really care. Like, Democrat voters don't seem to really care because they keep voting for their oppressors. And this is communism to act this way, to say, well, we're going to fix all your problems and you don't have to do anything. Just trust us. Wink, wink, smirk, smirk. But they're just always claiming to want to help these people and they never do. And they actually do the complete opposite. I don't know if you remember this, but Joe Biden's administration was handing out crack pipes to the drug addicts. How is that helping anybody? I mean, how is that helping anything? I mean, hey, here, this is the toxicity of the whole my truth or whatever I want to be is safe and happy and fun. Like, if you're handing out crack pipes to drug addicts, you're not helping them. I don't know why this needs to be said, but you're not. And it's just so unbelievably evil. But yeah, they say that they want to help and then they don't. They aid people's ailments, and it's never about actually helping them.
Yeah, I mean, and they denied that.
Yeah, which was wild.
They certainly were. I mean, they absolutely were doing that. I think one of the things I can say, and I was a delegate for Donald Trump in 2020. The convention got canceled, but I was the delegate for him, and I certainly support him. And I even take some credit for getting Rand Paul, with whom I'm friends, you know, convincing him to get behind Donald Trump in 2016 after kind of a rough and tumble primary between them. But we have to, one of the things, the criticisms I have for him is that he didn't do much to weaken the vested interest in Washington. People have different names for it. Steve Bannon calls it the administrative state. But these are the people who work in Washington, get paid well, and they have the interests of Washington, D.C. in mind. They're the whole bureaucracy, because that's what they live off.
Yeah.
Anybody who's a threat to that, they go after. Well, Trump didn't really threaten them, in that regard. One of the disappointments I can say is that he didn't cut spending. But I, because he understood to get rid of, to hurt ISIS, to critically wound them, he had to cut off their access to money, which was coming through the oil wells, largely in northern Iraq at the time.
Yeah.
And what he did was he took them out and he cut them off from their money supply and then he wiped them out. And that's it. We haven't heard from ISIS.
Yeah, he did. I mean, thank God.
Not a threat.
That worked.
Yeah. I mean, but what in a similar way, the national security state spies on Americans. They are, they instigate, plots, where they entrap, Americans. They're doing all sorts of egregious things to harm us. Their interests are not our interests. Their interests are other things. They are, I think, responsible in many ways for, the attacks on Donald Trump. And I think one of the things that terrifies them most, and why they're going to pull out all the stops in 2024, is because they know that now he is on a warpath with them, that he gets it now, that he's got to cut the spending in Washington, D.C., not just, nipping around the edges, but blowing up these vested interests who hold so much power.
Yeah.
Think about what came out of those Twitter files.
Yeah.
What was exposed. Did you follow that?
Yes, I did. We covered that on this podcast. You guys, I'll link below for y'all to listen to that if you somehow haven't listened to those and heard about the Twitter files, but yes.
Yeah. And I'm friends with Michael Schellenberger, and I'm, we had him here as a speaker, and we've, I mean, it's astonishing. I was talking to him, he goes, I had no idea. Like when we first got in, we were like, wow, this is really bad. And then the deeper they got, they realized how vast this network was and where the financing was coming from it. I mean, this is a real problem. These people do not have our interests.
No.
Yeah, we still,
it's evil.
This idea that they, you know, that they are our servants because they're civil servants.
Yeah.
To, you know, protect our interests. Forget it. So Trump is going to be on the warpath when he goes to D.C. And you're going to see, I think, should he be elected, substantial, you know, cuts in government and reorganization of security situation. I think you're going to see some even bigger problems for some of these people who have instigated these things. And so they're going to push back at all costs against that. And it's going to make 2024 a really fascinating year.
Yeah.
But I think a lot is on the line. I mean, this is the big turn right now. This is a revolutionary. I think Vivek Ramaswamy said this could be the 1776 of our lifetime. He may not be wrong about that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, Ramaswamy, I've been calling him Swami, but he, like, at first I wasn't too sure about him. He's growing on me, like, a lot recently. I mean, he's just coming out and saying all of these things that I don't really think he would be saying if he, you know, were controlled by these people. I mean, I know exactly what type of people you're talking about in Washington, the type of people who, and I think they run tests, honestly. I think they have this weird system in D.C. where it's like they, all the people, like the news companies and the PR companies and the government agencies are like, hey, so what is so-and-so's sociopathy levels? Like, do you think that they could stomach the things that we're doing? And then there are usually, like, if they know that that person has a then they're like, no, I don't know. I don't think you should hire them because they're going to have a problem with your evil that you're doing. Or they'll say, yeah, they're a total robot sociopath and they can totally handle it. There's like, it's just, I don't think that Swami could be saying the things that he's saying and be on the wrong side of everything. A lot of people, it's like a big battle on Twitter. I don't know if you've seen it, but everybody's just like, he's the Obama of the Republican Party. And it's like, he's said some things that seem very polished, but that doesn't mean that he is the Barack Obama of the Republican Party. And I actually said that, but I'm changing my mind on him very quickly. And no, I just don't think it would be possible for him to say those things if he were genuinely bad. But yeah, I'm definitely starting to trust Swami more. And I hope that Trump makes room for him and, you know, his cabinet. I really do. I think that Swami could help with, you know, getting the youth more involved. I think he would be good at like being like a think tank head or something. Like, I think he would do well with getting like marketing ideas for social media stuff. Like Nikki Haley got really mad at him for TikTok stuff, but like, we've got to do an outreach campaign kind of strategy thing like the left does on the right and really organize and reach all different generations, not just, you know, the elders. We have to reach the younger youngs, and we have to reach them where they are, which is on social media. And I think Swami would just, you know, add a lot. So I do hope, and it's looking like Trump is going to, you know, have a place for him in his cabinet. I don't think he should be VP. I just don't think we know enough yet, you know, totally. I mean, he's just new to the scene. Not saying that that's terrible, but anyway, Trump is literally on a warpath. You're right. Like his first term, it was, you know, what's going on? Kind of like he slayed, but he had to figure it out. He had to figure out how DC operates. He had to meet people, learn about them, see if he could trust them, like try to work around all of it. But this second term is going to be his last term, and he is going to be on a warpath. And thank God, because we need him to come in, get rid of all of these, everybody calls them swamp creatures, but I've been calling them just snakes. They are snakes. These are terrible, evil people. They're so slimy. They don't care what wrongs they're doing to the American people as long as they get their big fat paychecks and get to live in their big fancy buildings and look down on the rest of the country that they call flyover country, because they don't care. They don't care about you guys. They do not care about American citizens at all. And so Trump has to, yeah, he will will be. I mean, I can tell he's been through so much. Like, they have dragged him in and out of courtrooms. He's had to sit there for hours upon hours on end, just relentlessly going through all of this turmoil that they've put. He's going to be on a warpath. And I just say thank God to that, because we need a president that is going to be on a warpath to really come in and just get rid of as many of these evil people as he can, because there's just not going to be another way. So I'm really glad that to hear you say that you think that he will, because I really think that he has to be. I mean, it is still so crazy to me to think of people who think that the 2020 presidential election was free and fair, and that it was totally normal and that everything is fine, even though we had all of this video and photo footage of the poll workers putting up plywood in the windows to stop the people from watching what they were doing. We have, you know, there were so many videos of people like putting Trump votes into shredders, and there was just all the duffel bags and the mules taking all of the ballot harvester people taking the ballots to the ballot boxes in the middle of the night. Why in the middle of the night? Why, you know, they all looked like homeless people, and taking all of these votes and putting them, these ballots, and putting them into the ballot boxes. Like, we have so much proof that it was just a stolen election, and just Joe Biden's rallies with like two people, even in Washington, D.C., even in like Virginia. Like, no, there's nobody that was showing up to Joe Biden's rallies. And I think that that just is telling. And they, of course, they blamed COVID for that with their little circles. Oh, we could only fit, you know, because of the social distancing, we could only really fit two chairs in here in this big auditorium. No, you just didn't have people show up to your rallies, Joe. Okay, let's just be honest. I've never even seen one Build Back Better hat. I've never seen a Build Back Better sign. I haven't seen these things. So I'm just wondering, where did these 81 million votes come from? Like, where's your even one singular solitary? Like, where's your one fan? Where is he at? I can't see him. Is he dead? Is he dead? Because the dead people are voting now for Democrats, apparently. It's also bizarre. But he definitely, I mean, that's just my opinion, but like, I definitely think that most of the country agrees that like, we just didn't have a free and fair election. Like, most of the world actually agrees. I think a lot of the world looks at the 2020 presidential election as like, really? That vegetable beat Donald Trump? How? And why are y'all not questioning that more? But yeah, if we did everything like the caucuses, that would be so much better, because just paper, pen, count the votes like humans, and we're watching you. Like, that would make more sense to me than the way that we're doing it. Like, having everything computerized is a problem, because it's very easy for people to just go in and change like digitally the amount of votes. Oh, we have one vote for Joe. That magically has turned into 1,000 votes for Joe, or 1 million votes for Joe. So I don't know. It's not up to me, but like, I definitely think we have like a whole, like a process problem right now. Like, we really, everybody needs to get involved. Like, you can do this. You can go be and sign up to be a poll worker. You can sign up to watch these people. You can just watch them and not sign up. You can just pay, like, peer in and try to, if they don't put plywood up, and see what they're up to. Like, these elections are supposed to be fair, and if we're not watching them, then they're going to cheat. And that's just the way that it is. So we have to just keep our eyes peeled. Okay. We got to keep our eyes peeled and not let them steal it again. We just can't have that, because we're losing our country. And a very, very, very big reason, probably the biggest reason, I would say, that we're losing our country is because there's not a separation of business and state. So I wanted to ask you, John, you know, we hear all the time separation of church and state, separation of church and state. Well, what about a separation of business and state? And why are we doing that? And do you think Trump is going to be able to tackle that beast? Because that really is, at the end of the day, I think, the biggest problem in Washington, D.C.
Well, that's a really good question. Thanks for bringing that up. I mean, I think, sure. Yeah, I mean, you have to... let me just actually, before we get into that, let me just say this about Vivek Ramaswamy. And he called me one day, because I reached out to him, and he came on our, we have a monthly Zoom meeting with the County Chairman's Association. He came on, he was only supposed to be on for about 10 minutes or so. Turns out he really had a great conversation with our chair, stayed on for like 35 minutes, and took all the tough questions from the chairs. They were all thrilled to have him on, and he's the real deal. He also, was inspired by Ron Paul, and those people, around the Ron Paul scene, they're very principled people, and I think he's a guy that we can rely on.
Awesome. And I love Ron. And I love Rand. I love Ron and Rand.
Yeah. And I'm going to spend a week with Rand. Is coming out to California. He's going to, put together a program for him to see, speak on the state. So I'm going to be spending quite a bit of time with him next month. But your other question, I mean, listen, I think there should be a separation of money and state. Look at all the shenanigans that we get away with because we create out of thin air.
Yeah.
Let's put it this way. Do you think we'd be sending, let's say, the money for Ukraine, for example, was a separate budget item, and that we had to send every American their percentage, their prorated amount as in a supplementary tax bill, send it to their house to pay for Ukraine. How quick do you think that funding would get cut off?
Yeah.
And what they do is they print the money out of thin air and turn it into debt, treasury debt that sits on the federal government's books. And, $34 trillion didn't happen by mistake. So yes, there should be a separation of money and state. There should be a separation of business and state. The business and state gets a little trickier because they get the money in and they got to spend it on something, right? And so then those people get money and they're like, if I invest, this amount is $100,000 in lobbying, $1 million in lobbying, I could get $50 million in revenue, which is, $15 million in profit. So for a $1 million investment, you get 15 times your money back. And that's where it gets, it gets icky and ugly. So yes, ideally we can do that. I think the real defense of that is, it really starts with the voters. They have to understand, how this country was founded, what it was founded on, why it worked for so long, how we've drifted away from it. If you read the Constitution, read Article 1, Section 8, the Enumerated Powers Clause, if you read that, the federal government should be like a tenth of the size that it is right now.
Yeah, 100%.
Much, 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 much smaller, the fraction of it. I've lost track of this number, but I'm going to stand by it because I'm sure I can find it again. But the estimate that 100 years ago, 115 years ago, was that all governments combined, city, county, state, federal, spent about between 8% and 10% of GDP. Well, today that number's up around 40%.
Wow.
If you were a socialist 100 years ago and you came back today, you'd be like, hey, you guys, we're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
Governments control 40% of GDP.
That's wild.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have some work to do to kind of get people reeducated about what the government is supposed to do. And that's, by the way, another thing that's bad about illegal immigration, because these people don't care. They just want, give me more. I mean, they don't get what are the basis and the ideas that founded this country. So, and then once we get the electorate to kind of understand it, then they send people, into Washington, and they elect people who understand what the appropriate role is and what the proper relationship is between the people and the government. And then you can make some headway into that. I mean, in the short term, the shortcut to it is to get somebody like a President Trump in there who's now going to, like I said, be on the warpath and cut spending and address the federal debt. But, for every time you get, once in a generation, if you're lucky, you get a Donald Trump, you got to deal with a Paul Ryan. I mean, Paul Ryan subverted the Trump agenda in the 2 years that we controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House. So we'll see what happens. I think Washington is kind of moving forward, but it's really, and it's going to keep going in the direction that it has been going, except for the fact that I think in some ways the American people are waking up.
Yeah, I agree with you. I do think people are waking up. I think, you know, I'll talk to people that are not, you know, that are in more red areas or, you know, purple areas and in the purple areas and the blue areas. I mean, like where you are right now, people are waking up everywhere and that's good. I hope it starts happening at a faster rate, but I do think it is happening and I'm excited about that. I love how you put, you know, a separation of money and state. That's an interesting idea. And it's an important idea because I don't think a lot of people understand the Federal Reserve and how the dollar literally means nothing. Like it's basically monopoly money these days. And I don't think people fully understand that. But I'm glad that we have people like you willing to come out and, you know, talk about these things and say, hey, yeah, this is a problem. Because a lot of the people, the biggest problem is there's just so many people at these higher levels that just won't even talk about this stuff. They don't even talk about the problems because they're benefiting from them. And that's really the truth of the matter. And so I really appreciate you like coming out and saying these things. And I hope more people start to. We have some really good fighters in the on our side right now. We have Harmeet, we have Swamy, we have you, we have Trump, we have like a lot of really good leaders that we need to, you know, use to the country's benefit, not just to our, you know, own benefits, but like to our future generations' benefit of just having freedom and living in a free country, of being allowed to worship God, which is you know, very quickly kind of going downhill. But we do have some good fighters. The one thing about the right that is kind of, you know, I guess just something that I worry about is that we're so individualistic. The left is very collectivist in nature, and that's just because ideologically that is how we are. And like the right is very individualistic and capitalistic, and the left is very collectivist and I need your help or I'm gonna die. And so they know how to come together more and they know how to organize better. And I think they're able to have a bigger impact and reach when it comes to, you know, really almost like the PR efforts of just getting the messages out. Their messaging is usually, it's not on fleek because their ideas are trash, but they get their messages out. And what I'm noticing on the right is that it just doesn't seem like we are as good at that. I hope that I'm helping with that. I hope that other people are helping with that, because that is a really important part of what we need to do. It's not that our ideas are worse, because they're actually way better. It's that we just aren't presenting them in a way, I think, publicly to the masses where they're seeing it and getting it and understanding it and agreeing with it. And I think that that's something we could be working on. But I do think Trump is going to win. I do think people are waking up. I agree with you. I'm glad we have you and all of these other leaders. And yeah, I mean, term limits could help. I mean, I don't know. We just have had too many like certain people and too many certain positions like for too long of a certain amount of time. And it's just their time to go. So it's just goodbye.
Yeah, I get these guys from the organization, the National Term Limits guy. I've known them for years. They're such good guys. You know, generally speaking, I support the idea because it connects on a certain level. But then, you know, I look at California and in San Francisco, we have term limits in San Francisco, we have term limits in California, and we're still a mess. And it's only gotten worse, you know, over the years. And don't forget that when you have term limits, you're you know, that means you're terming out a great congressman like Thomas Massey.
Yeah.
Or you're terming out a great U.S. senator like Rand Paul or Mike Lee.
I'm very protective over Rand Paul. I really am.
Yeah. So, I mean, so I don't know that it's the silver bullet that people think it is. I don't even know if it's that big of a help, frankly. I think the bigger thing is we have to, you know, just persuade people, get them deprogram and persuade people that this form of government, which governs the least, is in everyone's interests. That when we, you know, when government's there to protect the rights of the individual, it allows us all to live together in harmony, and much more so than the system we have now, where we you know try and stick our hands in other people's pockets and, you know, pretend that, you know, or try and gain power over resources that aren't ours. That's all a dangerous, you know, game that doesn't end well. So, you know, and there are some signs of hope in the sense, you know, Ideas in the Middle Ages, I think, traveled at about 15 miles an hour. Now they travel at the speed of light.
Yeah.
And you know, people have used the internet to create bubbles for themselves. On the one hand, on the other hand, it seems like as things go on, as time goes on, that those bubbles are bursting because people will still have to be confronted by reality.
Yeah.
And so some things are, you know, changing for the better. So I'm optimistic. I'm sanguine about the direction. I don't know how long it'll take. I hope, you know, in my daughter's lifetime, we'll see a freer place. But I have to say that there feels to me like this election, there's something super consequential about this election.
I completely agree.
You know, I don't see anybody on the horizon who could become president who really understands or, you know, or was willing to put themselves on the line to take on the forces that are working against individual liberty in our governments. And again, I don't know that it's, you know, that one person could be the, you know, the silver bullet, the panacea, but they can trigger something. They can turn the tide and get us going in a direction for the better. So I hope people get engaged and stay engaged in this election cycle, that they do some heavy lifting, do the 20% of things, which tend to be the tough things, that get 80% of the returns in terms of winning elections. And that we, you know, the Republicans, you know, who are on the generally on the right side of things, certainly imperfect, but generally on the right side of things, you know, get control of Washington, get control of the House, the Senate, and the presidency, and then see what happens, because there's no Democrat on the horizon, certainly not Joe Biden, who understands, you know, who is in favor of an appropriate relationship between the people and government. And that's, you know, that this may be our last chance.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, every election cycle, people say that, oh, this is the most important election of our lives. And, you know, but this one really is. And I mean, it really, really is. It's not just about it feeling that way. It is that way. Everybody remembers the 2020 presidential election. We remember that it was stolen. I mean, this is a very consequential election that will determine whether or not we are going to be like a communist nation or not. This is our election to choose freedom or communism. Communism is a slavery, and we need to choose freedom. I mean, we do not want to become like CCP China. We don't even get a lot of information from China because it's so bad over there. They don't even want people to know about how bad it is. I've said it before on this podcast, but there are clips that have come out from China of people who run over children accidentally in the street. But they treat the children that are run over like regular, just roadkill, like it's a squirrel, it's a human child. You know, in China, the other thing is that you're choosing between freedom and God, really, because we have religious freedom in this country. But when you have freedom, you just have more morality. Communism is devoid of God. It is devoid of morality. And you're going to have societies like that don't treat people like image bearers of God because they don't regard them that way, because they don't care, because they have been trained by their evil governments to just not think that they matter and that other people don't matter. And I mean, just envision that, like cars running over children, everybody acts like the children are squirrels. That's just regular roadkill. No, these are children that they're running over. So my point is that when you do not have freedom, you do not have God, you do not have morality, and then everything's going to collapse really fast to the point where you're going to be censoring the information from getting out so that people don't see how bad it's going. So you just don't want America to become like China, is my overall point. But this is the most important election. It's not just people saying that. It really is this time. And so everybody just really needs to get out and vote for Trump. And I do think he's going to be on a war path, like you said earlier. He has to be. He knows he has to be. He has been so targeted by these evil people. He has been sitting in courtrooms and being harassed and told he's done things he hasn't done and that he's a traitor, even though Joe Biden is the traitor who is selling us all out to these other foreign nations and with his son's help and his creepy mafia family's help. And you know, it really is a big thing. And I hope that people take it very seriously, because there's no coming back from communism, not without war. And so you're just going to want to really treat this seriously and learn about communism and understand that it has never worked. And so you're just going to not want to vote for the left, because they're open communists now. They're openly communists. Don't vote for them if you want to survive. But I think personalities like Trump, Trumps are what we need. Personalities like Vivek, I really am excited about him. I hope we have, you know, more people like that who can, because both Trump and Vivek are really good at, about getting people fired up to be pro-America and going after, you know, these evil entities. I really am impressed with how well Vivek is going after these evil entities, all these businesses, like we were talking about separation of business and state. Vivek seems very much about that. So we need more personalities like Trump's and Vivek's to really get people fired up and getting involved in their local and state, you know, governments and doing everything that they possibly can, because we can't just sit here and complain all the time and not be actively trying to change everything. I mean, you can't just sit in the corner of your house and cry all day while all this is going down. You have to get out there and see what you can do. Join the school boards, run for office. If you're not liking the people that you're seeing handle this stuff and be in charge and be your quote unquote leaders, then go do the job yourself. You cannot just sit in the corner of your house and cry about it. You just can't do that. You got to get out and do whatever, you know, you can. And if you are not sure what you can do, then reach out to me. I will help you brainstorm. John will probably help you brainstorm. I think I just volunteered you. Sorry about that. But we want people to be involved, and you really have to be. You just can't. We're all aware of the problems. We have to be a part of the solution now. And, you know, we're adults. These are serious things that affect us and our families and our lineages forever. And so we just really need to not just talk about it. We need to be about it. And we need to really get involved.
It's from a persuasion point of view. One of the reasons why I think some people are sick of hearing it, but what I've been talking about, you know, San Francisco registration, you know, going up, is because it inspires other people who are sort of sitting on the fence thinking, you know, maybe I'll register Republican. And then when they hear that it's growing, they want to join the group. They're, you know,
yeah,
you know, keep talking about the successes of the people who you like. And, you know, let's take the party affiliation out of it. If you believe in individual liberty, if you believe that, you know, that that the role of the government is just to protect your rights and protect other people's rights, and not to, you know, to give positive rights to people. In other words, to give things to people just because of their special interest. If you believe in those things, you know, promote those people, promote their successes, promote when those ideas are, you know, are being advocated. And it encourages other people who are sort of becoming aware of that to join in and take on the fight as well.
Yes, I completely agree with you. I have two more questions for you. The first is, are you planning on running again?
No, not really. I mean, if the right race came along, I suppose I'd look at it if I could be the right fit. But I think I've kind of matured on these things, not to say they're immature in the past, but as I've gotten into the age of where I am now, I am finding joy in recruiting other candidates, and I've got a great group of people running for office here in San Francisco now. So I'm very proud of them, and I'm proud that that we're helping them, you know, achieve the best possible outcomes they can. So I like that role. If there was a race where I felt like I could make a difference, like I was the best possible person as a messenger, it could win the race. Yeah, I would certainly take a look at that. But I like the role that I'm playing in the party, and maybe we'll, you know, do something, you know, run for a different position in the California Republican Party in the future. But right now, I'm pleased with what I'm doing.
Yeah, we'll just find some more Vivek's and we'll be good to go. I mean, that's what I recommend. But yeah, the more I research him, the more I like him. I feel bad for ever even, you know, kind of thinking, I don't know about you. Where'd you come from? He's really going after a lot of people that he needs to be going after, and I respect it. And my last question is, where can everybody find you online to learn more about you, see what you have to say? Because I know you have a lot of really good things to share, and they can also see your videos going up against Antifa and everything in California.
I think the best thing is at Real John Dennis on Twitter. Just go ahead and follow me there. That's a good spot. So the old John Dennis for Congress page on Facebook. I do some updates there. You can certainly, I would encourage people to join the Republican Liberty Caucus, RLC.org. And we're doing great stuff there. We're having, I mentioned the Liberty Index that we did. We had a great Twitter space with that recently with Congressman Massey, Congressman Biggs, a few other folks. We're going to be releasing the Senate Index, which ranks the voting records, as we did with the House. We're going to do that with the Senate. That's coming up soon. So you'll want to, you know, keep in touch with us on that. Join the Liberty Caucus, or at least follow us on Twitter and be around for that, because that's going to be really interesting. But those are kind of the main places, you know, Real John Dennis on Twitter and John Dennis for Congress on Facebook.
Awesome. Well, guys, I definitely encourage that you go follow John on social media, keep up with him, and definitely get involved in your communities. We all just need to be doing that. We really do. Again, if you have trouble coming up with what you think you could be doing, you're free to contact me at mail@jennyrobinson.com. I love helping people brainstorm ideas for things and ways that they can be helping. And I know a lot of people want to and just don't know what to do. So feel free to reach out to me there. But John, again, thank you so much for coming on. It's been an extremely important conversation. I think that we need to do another episode and talk more about the separation of business and state. I really like how you put the separation of money and state. That's a really interesting idea. And yeah, I think that we are just going to keep having these big, intense conversations. And hopefully we are in a different place next year in our country, but it's going to take all of us working together. And again, this is not something that I think that the individualist conservatives are really used to having to do, but we're going to have to get used to working together better. And because the left is so good at that, they really are. I've said it a million times. They're really good at organizing. They're really good at being a collective. And then we have to get a little bit better at that and working together and going out and just not being so isolated and siloed from what's going on in our country. We have to be involved as a part of the solution, as John is doing in California. So I just thank you so much again. I really respect all the work you're doing. And let me know if you or anybody else that you know has any information that they would like to get out. I would be totally open to having any of your guys on, having you on again. We just need to keep getting this information out to everybody, and that is what we're going to do. Thanks, John.
Terrific. Thanks for inviting me, by the way.
The pleasure was mine.